Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my, let's call him amazing today, amazing co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how's your week been so far?
Why, thank you. I appreciate that. The week's been great, busy. It seems like it's a busy time of year. And of course, throwing a few podcasts on a Friday to finish off the week. And what could be better?
Well, I'm super excited today because we're going cross-border and oh boy, what a time to be talking cross-border. So we could be getting into it today, so we'll see what ends up happening. But we are thrilled to welcome Amanda Mitchell to the podcast. And Amanda is a seasoned people and culture leader with a passion for building high-performing teams in fast-paced, high-growth environments. As director of people at Clearco, she plays a pivotal role in shaping the company's talent strategy, fostering an inclusive culture, and ensuring employees thrive in a rapidly evolving fintech landscape. Based in the U.S., while working with a Canadian-based company, Amanda brings a unique cross-border perspective to talent management, remote work dynamics, and scaling global teams. With Clearco's mission to provide e-commerce businesses with fast, scalable funding, she understands the importance of agility, innovation, and strong culture in an ever-changing digital economy. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robin. Listening back to the intro, I'm like, oh, yes, that is what I do. So I appreciate that.
Well, consider yourself lucky because a couple of weeks ago, when the whole hockey thing was going on, Al showed up for 4 podcasts in a row in his Team Canada jersey. So
I did.
He was being nice today. He didn't do that to you because I thought, oh, maybe there'll be a little competition going on.
You know, I hope you guys don't mind, but I do call myself an honorary Canadian. So I hope that's
we don't mind at all.
Okay, perfect.
We would love it if more people would consider themselves honorary Canadians. That's great.
Yes. So
the one thing I will say, Amanda, is through this whole thing with, you know, what's going on with tariffs and all this and Canadians in the U.S., the one thing that has disappointed me as a Canadian a little bit has been the booing at the hockey games and booing at national anthem. I don't care where you're from. I don't care what anthem it is. There's never going to be a day when I'm going to boo another anthem. So hopefully we can get that out of our systems and not do that anymore. And hopefully we'll be on a path to having that great relationship we've always had with the U.S. Right?
Yeah, of course. The bottom line is respect and for everyone. But I understand where it's coming from. And I hope that we're all able to move together, you know, respecting our humanity that we share beyond the
Exactly. Well, let's jump into it because, again, I think you've got a unique perspective. So you're based in the U.S., but you're working with a Canadian company.
Yes.
What unique opportunities and challenges does that present for you and the people in the culture space?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So for context, we're based out of Toronto. The predominant majority of our workforce is Canadian, so we're not many Americans. I'm actually located in California too, so I'm a West Coaster, loves East Coast time, so it really works for me and the way my life's set up. But I'll share this. I've grown into the HR world of things within Clearco. I have a non-traditional background, and coming into Clearco with a different role, moving my way through the org. And the challenges are pretty basic HR stuff of like employment law. I didn't realize the complexities around employment law, even by province in Canada. And so I think the challenge for me personally has really been to take it upon myself to research, to educate, to read the Employment Standard Act, like understand what that means for our practices. And what I've done and taken is, to be honest, U.S. employment law isn't all that favorable to employees. So we do something unique in that, as a kind of goodwill gesture to our American employees, we apply the ESA to them. So we have employment contracts there at will employment for the U.S., which doesn't offer them much protection or support. So we do consider everyone the rights that the ESA has for Ontario. We're headquartered in Ontario, so it makes sense that we do follow that. But yeah, I think that's been a challenge, but also the opportunity for me is I do believe I'm able to run an HR function for even the Americans that is far more favorable to what maybe traditional U.S. employment law would have for them. So that's one insight. I think employment law is a big one. I think as an American joining a Canadian company, there are cultural differences, but for the better. Like truly, a lot of folks in my network and circle in life know how much I enjoy working with Canadians. There's definitely a stamp of Canadian culture in our company culture, right? There's a lot of mutual respect and just salt of the earth kind of energy. The people here at Clearco are so just folks you want to rally around. And there's a lot less of the, I'm coming from like Silicon Valley, tech startups. I was in recruiting. So I saw a lot of the underbelly of tech, the not so attractive side of it. And so there's just more authenticity I have in the tech culture I've seen in Canada. Yeah, I think maybe I'm being a little bit biased because the people I work with are so great, but it feels very different from the competitive nature that Silicon Valley can kind of breed a toxicity to that I haven't really experienced with my Canadian counterparts. So
that is interesting.
That's good to hear. And now maybe you should have worn your Canadian jersey today. Hey,
yeah.
Hey, this is going well. I like this. Amanda, this is a great episode. We did episode 200 with Rich Appia, an employment lawyer, and I'll be biased. I will say the best employment lawyer in Toronto, at least. So if you ever need a contact, he's the guy. And he did such a fantastic episode for episode 200. He's been on the podcast a couple of times. But I'd love to hear more about your non-traditional background, because it's interesting. A lot of people in the PNC space we talk to, that has been their whole career, moving up the ladder until they get to that desired position. But then we've met a couple of really successful people with completely non-traditional HR background. So I'd be curious just to hear what that background and what that kind of trajectory looked like for you.
Totally. Yeah, I'd be happy to share. I'm going to try to make it short. I went to college in San Francisco. My family's from there. My mom's from Mexico, immigrated to San Francisco. I have a lot of roots and culture there. And I was very fortunate to be first generation college students. And my parents have been nothing but supportive. And they're like, get a degree, whatever that means to you. So I go to college and I end up studying theology and religious studies, not because I'm particularly religious or anything. I'm culturally, you know, grew up Catholic, Mexican, my dad's Italian. And so I did it though, because I was like, I want to understand people. I have a very innate drive to be in service to others. And I was doing the psychology stuff and I was like, theology and religion is fascinating, and it's a perspective into what motivates folks and all of that. So I really went deep. I got into my kind of advocacy roles. I did a lot of work with the incarcerated population through college, and that was a personal interest and focus for me. And, you know, I was really committed to being a part of restorative justice. I was working with folks who were sentenced to life as children under the age of 18, doing work with them, restorative justice, all of that. So I went pretty deep into the service world and working in like San Quentin and prisons, and ended up thinking like, okay, this is all great, but I have to make money and like live and all the things. So I started to reorient myself to like, maybe I could still do this good work, but in government, have a stable job and all those things. I go to government after I graduate, still working with incarcerated folks, the corrections department, thinking like, okay, yes, they're the problem, but be the change you wish to see. And I go and I hate it. I hate a cubicle. I hate everything about it. There's so much bureaucracy, red tape. Everything was too much. So I left this pretty prestigious fellowship opportunity that was going to turn into a full-time job and went back to San Francisco and couldn't get a job for the life of me. So I you know, have this degree working in tech Silicon Valley. And I started to, I don't know if you guys had it in Canada, but it's called TaskRabbit. It's like one of the first gig economy.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So TaskRabbit just came out and I was like, I'm quite handy. My dad taught me a lot. I'm good with building things and all this stuff. And so I became a TaskRabbit and my main jobs were cleaning houses, cleaning startups, startup kitchens, which were horrific, and building furniture for women who were single women and didn't know, you know, IKEA sets and everything. I'll say this, and I share this with my team a lot too, is that's such an important period of life for me because I feel very deeply committed to never asking someone to do something that I'm not willing to do myself, right? It was quite humbling to be in this kitchen cleaning out the microwave with all these kids who are my age. We have the same education and I'm cleaning their mess. And so, yeah, it was a big period of reflection for me and humbling, but also encouraging. And I was scrappy. I made it work. I was still paying a San Francisco rent off that. And I ended up still staying very close to my higher ed connections. And so I got into the admission side of higher ed, working for a program, you know, just knowing someone, always working my network and just genuinely being interested in what others do has kept my network alive. And so I got a temp job being like a program coordinator for a graduate program. And I found out if you're a full-time employee, they pay for grad school. So I was like, you know, to subsidize experience, I'm going to go the education route. I have this kind of woo-woo degree. So I want to get in the school of business. I want to make good money. I'm going to do it that way. So I ended up working in higher ed so I could get my master's and I got in organization development, which is pretty like traditional HR OD world. And everyone there was pretty traditional HR. And I was just there to learn as much as I can and spin it on its head to get a better job. It was there where I was like talking with my fellow students. I was like, oh, I do not want to be an HR person. Like, so not me. I'm glad you guys are doing it, but that's not me. But I met a woman in this cohort who was really brilliant, asked smart questions in class. And I was like, what do you do? Like, let's talk. And she was a recruiter. And so she started training me while I had my other job, while I was going to school. And I was working as a recruiter in like a 100% commission kind of scenario. And what we did is it was a white glove agency for early stage startups. And so the founder of this agency took me under her wing. I became her first full-time employee, like not a contractor. I realized I hated recruiting because I hate telling people bad news, which silly me. Now I'm HR doing all the hard calls. But I was like, I still get what you guys are doing. I want to expand the business. I love meeting these founders and helping them grow. So how can we make this work? And I became her chief of staff. So I became the agency founder's chief of staff and just worked alongside with her to expand our business. She never took any fundraising money. It was all bootstrapped. She got a membership to a social club. And we would go there and like listen in on other people's conversation if they're startup founders and kind of pitch ourselves at the bar or at the restaurant. That was the best. I think that was a crash course in technology. It was a crash course in startups and relationships. But I was also like HR. I was client manager. I was everything as a chief of staff. And I realized I got to still continue my roots of being of service to others and helping people get jobs and all these things. But I also learned about business and I learned about how people are making money and what are they doing to reach those goals. So as a chief of staff, I really honed in the generalist lifestyle, learning as much as I can. And it came to a point where the founder was really happy with the growth of the agency. She wasn't going to grow more. I felt as though I've kind of done all I could in that space. And was ready for my next move. And so ClearCo came into my network, I think even through LinkedIn maybe or something. I just saw about it. And my wife at the time was a startup founder herself. And she was having a hell of a time raising money, right, in that world. And ClearCo at the time was positioning itself as a more equitable alternative to traditional money, right? Like going to a bank, taking out debt, all those things. So I felt personally aligned with that mission. Like, I see the struggle my wife goes through. Here's a company breaking that down. And they had a role open as like a coach. And I just started taking positive intelligence coaching classes. Like, let me try my hand at coaching. Why not? And I applied for the coach position. And one of the former founders is great. He hopped on a call and was just like, hey, this isn't the role for you. It was like coaching more economics and everything. And I was like, okay, no problem. And with our now COO, I also interviewed with him. And I was like, that's no problem. But do you guys have a chief of staff? And they're like, no, but we're growing in this way. So I ended up writing a job description, sending it to them, closed out the convo. And months later, they reached out and said, hey, we're ready for a chief of staff now. Do you want to interview? So I came on to ClearCo in the early stages of, we were still like moonshot programs, running a ventures team. And in that chief of staff capacity, it was more of the HR for that team, right? Like being their support, recruiting, growing it, building rituals, having our first like onsite, or as actually a virtual onsite. And ClearCo has been through a tremendous journey of evolution, of resiliency. We got refocused as an organization of what we're offering. We have one product offering now. We've been through a lot of restructurings. And in October of 2023, we relaunched officially of what we call ClearCo 2.0. And since my chief of staff days, I was always looking for opportunities in ClearCo to kind of make my own job. So I moved from that to talking with the head of people at the time saying, hey, who's running employee engagement? Like, who cares about the employee experience? No one was. So I started that role of employee engagement, internal comms, like owning that type of thing. And then right before the relaunch in October of 23, I've had my hand in a lot of different places at ClearCo that the head of people was headed off to her next opportunity. And I was ready for it. So I was promoted at that time. I've been leading the function ever since. And yeah, I'm really grateful to be sitting in this position now, to having seen all of it and still feeling very proud of what we've built and still feeling very excited about the future.
Well, I'm very glad I asked the question. And the reason why I asked the question, there is a purpose behind it, because we had on a great guest. You might know her. She's almost a celebrity in the GTA HR tech world, Christine Song. We had a great lunch with Christine.
Yes.
And we always ask people that we have on the show, like, what would you change? What would you improve? Any kind of advice? And Christine said, she goes, I love the podcast. I know she listens to every episode. She's told me that. At least maybe she's being nice, because she is very nice. And I hope she listens. But she did say, I love when you ask the questions that I can get to know the person behind the role. And you just allowed us and the audience to do that. So I think that's going to be helpful for a lot of people at all different stages of the career, to think, just because you're here doesn't mean you're stuck. And I love that you're writing your own journey as you go, right? Literally writing your own occupations. And I've always said there are people on our side who are founders and starting the company. And then there are people that, if you're really lucky, you get some of them in your company. We have some of them, these entrepreneurs who are coming to you with these ideas that you might not have thought of, that say, I want to grow the company and here's how, and creating, like you did, creating their own role. So I think that's incredibly valuable to have both types of people to make a really successful company.
Totally. And it's important too, as leaders, to understand that all types do exist. There will be some that it's easier for them to write their own story and present to you. And also, I want to be mindful to create environments that help the others thrive too, right? Like, here's structures we have in place, like where my journey has led insight to certain types of ways in past, and I try my best to continue to stay thoughtful and educated on folks who aren't like me. And what does that look like? How can we help them thrive?
Amanda, you alluded a little bit to what I want to ask you already, but you're obviously operating in a fast-paced environment. ClearCo is working on a lot of e-commerce with fast, scalable funding. So from an HR perspective, how do you go about building that strong company culture where you're in that high growth, fast moving environment? And then maybe throw in the cross-border challenges on top of that.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, I think there's no silver bullet to these scenarios. I think for us, Well, one, we get to understand the unique challenges of our customers and our clients who are also fast-paced or growing, founder, all of that. So it allows us to be far more compassionate to who we're serving. And internally, I think the biggest lesson for me is that to never assume what we think's going to help or work or whatever. Personally, I've taken, even before I was the head of people here, it's always important to listen and start there. So I consistently am on a listening tour, checking in with different leaders, checking in with not leaders. Like, I have a lot of one-on-one calls with all levels of the organization. And I think that's crucial for me to keep a pulse on things, to talk to folks, and to create the space for folks to come to us with suggestion and ideas. I think if it's always top down, that's when it doesn't work, right? Like, we have to be building for the folks who are here. Another big piece for my team too, being that the people team in HR tends to be like a service center for the rest of the organization. So there'll always will be things needed of us, but it's important for us to understand what's priority. And something I do with them is, what are glass balls versus rubber balls? I don't know if you guys have heard that before, but
I have not.
We're going to learn something.
Yeah. So here's how I pitch it is, there's always balls to be juggling, and people will continue to give us more balls to juggle. But it's on us to understand what's a glass ball, meaning if we don't catch it, it will break, versus a rubber ball. It's going to bounce back up again, and we can pick it up when we have the capacity to. I think that helps us in setting clear expectations with our stakeholders and also for ourselves to take a beat. And I catch myself too, with that fast-paced environment. You keep going. I just had a conversation with Andrew, our CEO, this morning of, we are in a marathon, but we continue to act like we're sprinting. So how do we change that mindset and that shift of, still, we have high expectations of folks. We have high expectations of the company, but how do we achieve that in a way that's thoughtful and not burning people out? It requires constant check-in and constant just listening. I think that's my biggest thing, is to listen. As far as the cross borders piece of it, I think I don't mind sharing, like, personally, I'm devastated with what's happening in the United States. And since the election, it's personally been quite hard for me. And I use that as a reminder to say, okay, I know my experience, but what is it like for my counterparts over there? What are their experiences? So again, coming back to the listening piece, and I even just checked in with my team member yesterday. I was like, what is it like to be you as a Canadian, hearing these things and everything that's happening? And how can I show up for you? And like, showing up can mean, yeah, I want to talk about it. Showing up can mean, hey, I need your help protecting my time so I could take time off and like really decompress, or whatever it may be. So yeah, I think to remind myself that my world is my world doesn't mean it's exactly what others are experiencing. And that's an effect of remote life too, like regardless of the context we're operating in. It's just important to realize we're whole people. I don't expect people to be able to code switch and take this code off now I'm at work and it's this, like, that's unrealistic. And a big thing too is, and I say this at orientation, we're not a family. We are a team, right? We don't have the expectations that maybe a family would, and unhealthy and all of that. But a team would support you, and a team ebbs and flows, and we're in this to win the game. But some of us sometimes have to step up while others take a break, or whatever that may look like. So not sure if I got to your question, but
you absolutely did. And I love the analogy of the glass balls and rubber balls. I'll remember that. But I did, if I can just dig a little bit deeper, you know, you said you're on a constant listening tour. Like, for someone who might be listening to this, what does that look like? Like, if you were giving that advice to someone in your role, like, what do you actually mean by I'm on a constant listening tour? Are you picking up the phone? Are you jumping on team calls? Are you talking one-on-one? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so I have a lot of one-on-ones, and I have them reoccurring. So it's always a placeholder there, not necessarily weekly, some are bi-weekly, some are monthly, but I like having them on the calendar, because if they're not, it's easy to just not talk to that person. Mm-hmm. Time goes on. I tell folks too, it's always flexible. If something comes up, nothing urgent, we can move it. But having it on the calendar helps me stay to actually connecting with people. So that's one piece of it. I also have to really explain the difference of my role to folks. Like, yes, I'm HR. Yes, if you come to me and you are asking for something to be documented or reported or whatever, we will take those steps. I have to make very clear that my availability to you is never to like employer monitor anything. It is only you are in the driver's seat. If you're telling me you want me to action something or investigate something, but nothing will happen unless you give me that consent. So being very upfront, if you're someone who's in HR, understand what that title carries. I also, and it's kind of a silly thing, but if I'm having a conversation with someone, I'll put an emoji in all my calendar invites so they know it's not like a serious HR call. So, you know, just little indicators of like, this is a safe space. The other thing about the listening tour is I like know every person in the company. That's probably a little creepy to them, but knowing their pictures, who they are, their names. And so I can like go through in my head a catalog of folks. And if I'm hearing something that's maybe happening in a certain department or there's been challenges, I have personal relationships with these people. So I can reach out to them and say, hey, you know, such and such, just want to check in. Would you be open for a coffee chat? And the more casual you can frame these conversations, the more richness you'll get out of it. Coffee chats tend to be the most profound conversations we have. But it's not for everyone, and not everyone wants to talk to HR. And so, you know, you dabble and you make yourself available. And I think the most important part, too, is establishing that when folks are onboarded, like, hey, this is what I do here. Everyone knows, too, my calendar's up to date. They can grab time directly. I may ask them for context, you know, so I can prepare, but making myself available to the organization, I think, is the best way to continue to like listen and be on that tour.
There's a lot of great takeaways there.
Yeah, thank you. And the last thing I'll just say is like, folks have to be able to trust you. And so when you're in this position of HR or power, you have to respect that trust. So if they're sharing things that are personal, like, I don't go back to the CEO and tell him everything. Like, obviously there's certain things around safety or whatever that if I have to make those judgment calls, but the employees need to know that I am a safe place for them to go and to honor their trust in that.
I especially like the part about not running back to the CEO and telling them everything. You know, I'm a real fan of that. I'm joking around because Al's our CEO. Oh. So anything I say is not going to get back to him. Thank goodness. Yeah.
Wow. And you trust Al, I'm sure, that Robin will let you know if you need to know about it.
That's right.
Exactly.
It's on a need-to-know basis.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And right now, you don't need to know. That's right. Where I'd like to go next is, you know, when I'm looking, especially at the tech space, and Clearco included, because you're working in that space.
Yeah.
Agility is really key. You're in an innovative space, right, where that's rewarded. In terms of people and culture, how do you balance that need for structure? Because there has to be structure in every company,
yeah.
But still maintain flexibility. And the reason why I'm asking about flexibility, that came from a discovery call I did yesterday. Mm. And that's what this organization, a little bit smaller than you guys, but they're trying to, hey, we've got to have a certain amount here, but we also want to give you the flexibility so that innovation happens.
Yeah.
Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So here's like a practical thing I do. And I learned this from my executive coach, who that's been a key for me too, being a leader and in a fast-paced environment that's constantly changing. There's constant demands is make sure you're well-resourced individually. Like I have therapy, I have a coach, I have skiing time I do. So you have to make sure you're personally resourced well. And then for the team, this is something we try our best to do, but we treat our week like a yoga practice. And so it's easy on the way in, easy on the way out. And you know and can expect the meat and potato of what you need to get done is going to happen, you know, Tuesday through Thursday. And I think that helps us kind of prepare for things. Like, I know I'm going to be exhausted on a Wednesday, but I also know I'm going to have some open space to think and to do heads down work on a Monday. And so setting up expectations for yourself of when to do the hardest work is helpful. That said, things are ever changing, right? So sometimes, like my Monday this week was a Wednesday. It was a very intense Monday. And I think knowing what's hard-coded as reoccurring work you have to do every week versus what's glass rubber ball work that you can adjust is important. I think it's important for leaders and managers to be that filter for their team and show them how they're filtering. Like for my team, I think it's a good sign if I can take vacation and know things are going well. That doesn't require me to know how to do everything my team does, but at least know about what they're doing. And I think to clue them in on, hey, here's how I'm thinking we're reprioritizing things. And here, I need you to go reset expectations. And then offering it as, what do you think? You know, so making sure we're co-creating our work, we're co-creating our expectations, and seeing ourselves as, you know, for HR and people folks, we do see the employees as our customers. And so like, what's the customer service that we're able to offer? And I just told the team, I do payroll as well and all the benefits and stuff. And if something happens or a mistake happens, imagine it happened to you. What would you want to hear for your communication and all of that? So just little tidbits that I try to keep us going and to acknowledge that it ebbs and flows. And when we have slower times, I really encourage people to lean into it. Sometimes I think, especially in a capitalistic culture, you kind of stay busy to be busy and like, it's not healthy or helping anyone. So ride the waves with it and grant yourself some grace within it too.
Can I tell you a funny story about being busy to be busy? So when I first started in the business, so my role was building out employee benefit plans as well as pension plans for, at the time it was agents, but eventually it became brokers. Mm-hmm. So I had to be in downtown Toronto every morning at 7 a.m. because I had to walk around and visit all the agents and make sure that would drum up business. And I carried a briefcase and no one knew. All it had was a bag of crackers in there. But I would carry this briefcase around and walk as quickly as I could because I was very young and I looked young, you know, when I was first coming in. And I thought if I walk around, I'm two things. One, they're going to think, wow, he's busy. He's got things to do. He's important. And two, I would fool all these people that I was successful because I was that busy. So yeah, being busy just to be busy is kind of silly. And I like what you talked about. You know, you said your Wednesdays are going to be, you know, you're going to be exhausted. Al and I and Joe, our other business partner, did something recently and we structured our week in such a way. And I don't know why it took this long to do it, but I used to be at the mercy of my calendar and people on my team would just pop things up. And there was one day, there were six to eight appointments one day. And I said, like, did I do something to hurt you? Because you're getting payback now.
Yeah.
And now we've structured our week in such a way that every Monday, now things can come up, but every Monday I know I've got a ton of meetings in the morning, you know, start the week off with the team, make sure everyone's kind of rowing in the same direction. Yeah. But then I've got a strategic block from 1 till 3 where I'm not answering the phone. No one's coming into my office. I'm not answering texts or emails. And I'm going to set strategic things for the week.
Yeah.
And then the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I've got blocks in the morning and the afternoon where I know those are going to be appointments. And I know they're probably going to be filled back to back because that's just the volume we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And then we set up a Friday so that by the end of Friday, I've got some more time to, I call it a buffer block, where I can just get some things. And again, like you said, things are going to happen in your week.
Of course.
But that way, your calendar is not going to control you and you have a little more control over how your work life looks, at least. Yep. So I think things like that, and again, success leaves clues. We're teasing out a lot of clues today that you've talked about that I think will be valuable for other people.
Totally. I agree 1000%. And I think early on too, even for myself, when you're trying to prove yourself and all the things, and especially being a woman in a male dominant space, like technology, not necessarily HR, but technology, it's easy to become a yes woman or a yes man or a yes person. And just say yes to everything. And something I've learned, and I say this a lot too, is what we say no to is probably more important than what we say yes to. And so like having that critical lens on what's coming into your calendar, what's coming into your workflow has helped me a lot in my own personal growth.
Amanda, this has been a great conversation. And I think we can all agree that we've learned a lot. And then you've dropped a great amount of valuable little tidbits along the way, which is great. I'm going to go completely off script here.
Okay, let's do it.
So I'm going to ask you a question that you're not prepared for at all. Monday, you said, you know, the middle of the week was tough and your weeks are set up like a yoga class. Mm-hmm. But what's your downtime look like? What do you do when you're away from work and you don't have to think about work? What are you doing?
Such a great question. It's so important to diffuse what's happening and everything in a different way. And you know, it's funny, folks in my life who don't know, I'm a remote worker. The people in my town don't know me. They would be shocked to know that this is what I do for work because I'm so different in the outside world. For me, in the winter, I ski. I ski about 2 to 3 times a week. And because I work East Coast time, I'm able to hit the mountain after 5 o'clock. I have 2 golden retrievers, which require hiking and walking every day. And I think even if I didn't have dogs, I walk for my mental health. Like,
yeah, me too.
No matter what, I'm walking at least twice a day. And then a big thing for me too is get off my like screens in general. I listen to a lot of music. I work outside with my hands. I love to build. If I wasn't in this career setting, I think I would do like more carpentry or like landscaping work just with my hands. So for me, it's doing things that are completely different than my work life and really honoring that space. It's easy to just overwork. Like I'm very tempted to keep going even all weekend and everything, but I owe it to myself, my partner, my family to have healthy boundaries around it. And yeah, that's how I re-energize or fill up my cup a bit.
So I think you answered the question. Are you able to essentially walk out of work on Friday at 5 o'clock and literally just forget about work for the weekend?
I want to say yes, but it's not always a yes. And my CEO knows and my team knows if it is something's happening on the weekend, it's because it has to. It's not because that's our, you know, and so that's why I don't expect my teams to work weekend. If it does happen, it was probably pretty important, but we protect weekend. So yes, today, 5 o'clock Eastern time, I'll be closing it up. And we're not heart surgeons too. That's something I tell folks, like, we're not saving lives. If it can wait till Monday, it will wait.
Right. Perfect.
What do you say, Al? Is it about time for a signature question time? I think it is.
Absolutely. And I think Amanda will probably have a great answer based on everything we've already talked about. So yeah, if you're ready, Amanda, here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any proverbial trees that you're planting that may be helping to shape the future of work and leadership? Or maybe it's something that you're doing on a personal note.
Yeah, I think being in the process of healing on a personal level is allowing me to plant seeds for that future. I have 3 nieces and nephew who live next door. A lot of the decisions I make for me personally are with that lens of when I'm not here, how is it going to affect them? And it shows up in work and in my personal life. If I'm not doing the self-work of healing and introspection and, you know, reflecting on my impact in this world as a person, it won't translate elsewhere. And I think I may not even see the fruits of my labor of healing. And, you know, I talk with my mom a lot about generational trauma and coming from a culture that's quite machismo and marianismo and a lot of different concepts there. But this healing that I am doing, the kids are watching, the people around me are watching, even if we're not talking about it. My team sees me, my community sees me. And I think that's what I'm hoping is cherishing my own health and life and mental health is something that I hope I'm modeling for folks. And when I'm gone, I hope to leave a model for the kids in my life or others around me of what self-healing looks like and investing in yourself and giving a lot of grace. And I think hurt people, and I think healed people heal people. And that's the shade I hope to create in the future. Not that I'm perfect. And I think even with my team, I don't expect them to be like, I'm going to work for you forever, but I hope in their future, they're in some certain setting and they're like, I remember when Amanda and I did this and it helped me in this capacity. So planting seeds is all I can hope for. I don't expect to bear the fruits of my seeds, but if we don't plant the seeds, they will stop growing. And I think we all should feel a collective responsibility to each other and our humanity.
Well, on that note, yeah, you've dropped a lot of great pieces of advice and a lot of, well, clues, as Robin would say, that will lead to success. So really glad that you shared everything and that we had this conversation today.
Thank you guys so much. It was so kind of you to invite me in this space, and it's given me a lot of energy. This has filled my cup up. So yeah, even if it was a non-recorded conversation, I appreciate you both asking such thoughtful questions.
Well, before we go, we do have to give a thank you to Andrew, your CEO, who we had such an amazing conversation with as well. And I think Sam might have been involved in coordinating as well. I've been reaching out to Sam on a couple of things. She's just, what a wonderful person. I'm so glad we're connected with her. So, and you as well. For listeners who want to find out more about you or what you're doing at Clearco, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Yeah. So for Clearco, you can always reach us at clear.co. Clearco. And then as far as my LinkedIn, the regular LinkedIn /AN Mitchell with the number 9. That's my profile. Yeah. And please connect. I'm a little slow on the return, but I would love folks to reach out, and these conversations I'm always open to.
Well, perfect. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you could tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. We hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here again. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.